Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock, Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor.
Hey.
We got quite the show. A little major action went down last week with the Champions Cup crowning.
Little major. I think that was an oxymoron.
Is what it is.
Okay.
No, there was a what'd little major action.
Nice.
Yeah. We also will update the Manufacturers Cup. We had the return of Hot Take Hannum. Got to go over that. And then we'll update our top 10 to round out the show. Also, we'll have a Silas Select back. Silas.
Yeah, Silas. Actually.
Sorry.
Go Select, Silas. Go
Silas
Select.
Select for the end of the show.
Go Select, man.
Silas is selecting.
But before we get into all of that, let's start off with a thing in our sponsor today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know that one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer among men aged 15 to 35. And with April being National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. You can visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, use promo code GRIPLOCK for 20% off and free shipping over at manscaped.com. You can perform simple routine checks at home while enjoying Manscaped's product you use every day, such as the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. The 5.0 Ultra features two interchangeable skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade for going smooth and sleek. With dual LED spotlights, you achieve better visibility, making every trim more precise and hassle-free. Don't like making a mess? This thing is waterproof. You can shave in the shower, the bath, or even the ocean if you want. And you can bring this trimmer with you wherever you go thanks to its wireless charging capabilities and travel lock feature. In addition to providing the right tools and solution for comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That's why they'll be donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. Help save lives and balls by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny, educational check yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off and free shipping with code GRIPLOCKED. All right, Champions Cup results-wise, we had Andrew Presnell taking down his first ever major, followed up by Niklas Anttila. He's kind of becoming Mr. Second Place at majors at this point. And then you had Ricky Wysocki and Ezra Robinson round out the top three in a tie for third. And then on the FPO side, you had Evelina Salonen taking down her second major, and Henna Blomroos and Owen Scoggins tied for second. Evelina was able to take this down with only 67% C1X putting out there. But realistically, the final round, she had some challengers. Kristen was in position, and Henna made a big charge. Owen Scoggins was in position to kind of push, but it felt like going into this that it was going to be an Evelina and Kristen race. You had Silva Saarinen, who shot the round one hot round. She actually was making a charge early in the round, kind of pushing Evelina, but in the end, Evelina just was able to hold on. Everyone was kind of doing too little too late, and Kristen, really, we can call it what it was, just choked on some crucial opportunities that she had to cut into the lead and put more pressure on Evelina on the lead card, yeah. And she just wasn't able to capitalize, which led to Evelina doing exactly what she had to do out here, shooting 8 under
second
to win
of
this
the year,
major.
Too.
Yeah, her second one
I've
of the year.
I've got a lot of opinions on this course now that I've been able to digest it, and like, we were all just kind of curious to see what four rounds at Northwood would like even like play out. And now that I've seen it, I have a lot of opinions on it. I do think that one of the factors that led to players being able to hold on to their leads, because it happened in both divisions, like down the stretch, was like, I think this is a tournament where you had to jump into the lead and hold it. It wasn't really a tournament where charging late was going to be a great bet. There were players that got hot streaks throughout their round, most of them earlier in the rounds, I feel like. But trying to be aggressive on that course, you either have to go completely perfect, or the first second you make a mistake, you take a double bogey and your whole streak is done. Like, it is the most precise form of gambling, trying to play aggressively at that course. The players were out there just suffering for four rounds, basically. And what it became was the winner of this tournament was going to be somebody who could just throw a repeatable shot and hit their lines over and over again and stay out of the trouble. That's why putting did not matter for Evelina. Sure, it was going to save player strokes. The amount of strokes taken from tee until green was such a significant part of this tournament that a player like Evelina, who isn't going to putt that well, as long as she was throwing it solid, she didn't need to bail herself out of putting, and made quite a few good ones. 67%, while that is low, that's not her worst at all. And yeah, it makes sense that she was able to capitalize on a win like this, because when it got to the end of the tournament and she just needed to keep the disc in the middle of the fairway and stay out of the jail, she's a player that can do that.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the men's, but like that was another situation like that. But that was the one thing about this tournament that made it interesting is we got into the final stretches and I expected it to be really exciting because I was like, anything can happen. But because of the fact that the leaders were able to play so safe, like just ultimate tossing the disc 80 feet down the fairway was acceptable, and the aggressive play was so heavily punished if you didn't get it completely perfect, that it actually, you didn't really ever feel like a lot of those players were just, they were holding on, they were staying kind of in the tournament, but they were never able to, like, you weren't seeing that swing kind of initiate itself. And it got close a few times, but it was a very interesting tournament to watch. I don't know that I would want to see it any more than once a year.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, you just saw a lot of guys just getting crushed out there, and I think guys and girls. And I think that is fun for an event, and I think we really love it for just two rounds during Ledgestone, but this is not the brand of disc golf, and people are going to hate that because there are people that love Woods disc golf. But I'd be surprised if you could watch that event and say, like, that's the brand of disc golf we want to show to the world. Players just getting rocked out there. Like, and not rocked in the sense that they're throwing the disc really far and then it's going out of bounds. Rocked in the sense that they're hitting, like, the second tree and kicking 50 feet left out of bounds and then just scraping themselves up the fairway.
Yeah. I definitely... It's tough because the scoring wise, like if you show me this leaderboard, I loved it. I love everything about it.
Well, yeah, it produces a result that works out. But
yeah.
But like the product, I think it's fun as a like change of pace. To
but
be
what?
Like,
how can you possibly get this leaderboard without the woods?
Tougher OB. I think USDGC provides there is hotter scoring rounds out there, and I think that's disc golf. You're always going to have somewhat hotter rounds possible. But I think that there are still courses like Winthrop that provide a swing of a guy could shoot two over par and shoot 10 under the next day. And I think this course, I think another big part of this course is that it's kind of nonstop. It's like hole after hole after hole are these really long, tight fairways. And like I said, I thought it was exciting to have that for one event. But I think maybe if you mixed it up a little bit, and some of the holes were a little more of a breath of air, that would be better. Because like I said, I mean, it took forever. It was a really long, grueling... I mean, you were watching the last nine holes of that tournament. It felt like watching the last 2 minutes of a March Madness games where just foul after foul after foul. It's like, the tournament's over. We know it's over, at least for a little bit there. And it's like we were just like waltzing our way to this formality because of how long it took to play. And it was just like... short distance at a time, just chopping it
well,
up the fairways.
In FPO, the tournament wasn't over, and we didn't know it was over.
No, it was not FPO. I mean, not that, because that not that much.
Evelina won at 8 under. She shot 7 of those 8 under in round 3. She came out. Where is Evelina? Round 1.
No, and both tournaments. To be fair, both tournaments were plenty exciting and full of possibilities going into the final day.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I mean,
absolutely.
Evelina, it was electric until. Really, until her like third shot on 18, which we'll talk about 18 here in a second, because. Kristen, like I said, down the stretch, had Evelina shot even on the back nine. Okay, and I think this kind of points to what you were saying, is like the scoring nine was the front nine, so you had on MPO, you saw it more than FPO, but you had like Ricky come out to these really hot starts and then fall off.
There's
you had
a lot
Paul
of fizzling.
Come off to a really hot start, fall off. FPO, you didn't have that as much, but there was more scoring on the front nine to where the back nine, Evelina went even par.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was fine. That was good enough. Because like Owen Scoggins came out flat on the front. She was 1 over on the front nine and then shot 3 under on the back nine, but lost by 1. But like there was several birdie opportunities that like Owen just had to capitalize on. Henna Blomroos came out and going into the final round, Henna was 8 strokes back. I did like a recap show. I said this is a 3-horse race. You have Evelina, Owen, and Kristen. And I think Rachel Turton was tied with either Kristen or Owen. I think she was tied with Owen. She was tied with Owen. And I was like, I counted Rachel out. I just didn't think she was going to have it. But what it ended up being was Henna was able to capitalize down the stretch and go 4 under on the back nine. And she eagled 18 to put pressure on Evelina. And she was getting pressure from Owen, but Owen just didn't have the distance to eagle 18.
Yeah.
So Evelina was on the tee of 18, like par, I win.
Right.
And what I didn't like about 18 for really for MPO or FPO, but especially for FPO, because MPO had a really long tee, is it was eagle to birdie. It was easy to eagle. Well, not easy. If you had distance, it was easy to eagle. Really easy to birdie. Almost impossible not to par.
Yeah.
Like, Evelina threw what should have been, like, the drive Evelina threw should have made it where bogey was best.
Yeah.
It came out really early, really far left. She got not the worst kick, but it just kind of kicked down. Apparently, the day before, I didn't see her play hole 18, but the day before, she got a bad kick. But it just dropped to where she threw maybe 100 feet off the tee, 150 feet, and she still was able to lay up to win. Like, that shouldn't have been able to happen.
Yeah.
You know, you had a player eagle to get within one. There shouldn't have been a scenario where Evelina throws the drive she did and could still lay up from 80 feet to win. Like, that was kind of depressing.
Yeah, it would be one thing if she was able to get, like, a par putt.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If that 80-footer was for par and she has to hit that to win, that makes perfect sense.
That's pretty easy. That's kind of what happens, too, sometimes, though, when you have such a disparity in the field between distance. Like, Evelina is probably one of the top furthest throwers.
Yeah.
You're going to have holes that look a little lopsided like that, like especially the par fives. Because if they want, if they're designing an FPO layout and they want a par five to be eagleable for the field, it's going to be really easy for the top distance throwers in the field.
Yeah.
Like that's just, it's going to be a par four for them. And so she basically got a free shot.
Because 18 had, if I'm looking at this right, in the final round, zero bogeys. An average terrible. One stroke under par.
That's bad. Zero bogeys on hole 18.
71% field. 71% birdie. 29%.
And that is a cut field, so like it's a stronger.
Let's just go
field,
round three.
But still,
round three, it does bring in 23% bogey.
Yeah,
but still averaged. It was the easiest hole. Hole 18 was the easiest hole.
Yeah,
that shouldn't be the easiest hole in my opinion.
Yeah, which that
I don't
is,
think I don't know if hole 18
skewed,
should be the
it's
hardest.
Skewed a little bit because it's to par. Like I understand that 3, 4, and 5 are all three numbers in play.
But realistically, for the majority of the field, and you can see this, the people in contention, like you had, it looks like probably one eagle.
So on the final day, what were the percentages?
It was,
how many people birdied it?
71% birdie.
71%. So like that almost tells me that maybe it should just been a really difficult par four.
Yeah, because on the final day, you had, it looks like 24 FPO players. You had two eagles, so it would have been two birdies. And then you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bogeys, or 7 pars. It would have been bogeys if they were par four. But like my problem is just that that's the scoring spread.
There just wasn't
it's
a
like
lot
3 to 5.
They didn't,
so like if you had a 2-stroke lead, which Evelina did, well, she had a 1-stroke lead, like you couldn't lose it.
Well, it was one of the few holes that on the course where like you're not surrounded by woods the entire way to the basket, right? Like you get that opening, and I think that makes such a huge difference because like there's a lot of open space on that hole once you get out of the initial spot there.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it dramatically easier because you can just kind of poke it out there. And I think that was a huge difference. Like you're not going to find yourself in those like, okay, I just move forward 60 feet. Okay, I just move forward 60 feet. Like, that's where the rest of the course gets people.
Yeah, now, Evelina, I mean, she just played solid overall for the entire tournament. Like I said, 67% C1X. But to give you a little gauge, the leader was Hannah Wynn at 88% C1X. Like, no one was really putting great. There was a lot of wind out there.
Yeah, the weather's kind of tough.
She only led the field in circle one in regulation and circle two in regulation. She didn't lead in fairway, which surprised me. And she didn't leave in park percentage. Actually, Hannah Blomroos had her by one there.
She had both C1 and C2 in reg, though.
Yeah,
C1
and C2.
And like, that's, if you own those stats at this tournament, like, it's going to be pretty tough to lose.
It's also like she didn't lead gain tee to green. She didn't lead in a lot of stats, but she was towards the top in most of the important ones. Like, fairway hit percentage, she was fourth. Scramble percentage,
well, that's a fake stat.
That's a valid point. Park percentage, she was second. Circle one, she led. Circle two, she led. And then gain tee to green, she was second. And I don't know if they have the OB on here. They don't, so I can't see that. But she did what she needed to do to hold on. And funny enough, it was a very similar story both in MPO and FPO, where you had in FPO, you had Silver Saarinen take this lead. Okay, right? It looked like it could have been a lot bigger, but as the back nine happened, it kind of like leveled out. She had a 1-stroke lead. Round two, you have Rachel Turton push up, and she's now tied for the lead with Kristen and Val. Okay. Then round three, Evelina opens up her lead and then holds on. Whereas in MPO, you had Casey White was the guy round one and two. Round three, you have Presnell take over, Presnell holds on. So it kind of worked out similarly in both divisions, yeah. Funny enough.
Some of the most lead changes we've seen in disc golf, yeah. I will say that.
I'll get to that question in a second. But I do want to, we got to talk about really one big point. Kristin Tatar, like I said, she had chances, a lot of chances to win this. She shot 3 over in the final round. All she had to do was shoot even mm-hmm. to tie the lead. And also this final round most likely cost her to be the first FPO 1000 rated player.
I know. What a brutal last tournament to have
unless
to play on
the
that
947
streak,
drops.
Yeah.
Which I don't know her standard deviation. I don't know how that's going to work. I believe she needed to be closer to like 990 something on that last round to do it. Which wouldn't have been that hard with how she was playing that weekend.
It's a brutal event to have yeah. to have that on there.
So we'll find out here in a few weeks if that's true or not, but I believe she'll probably be 999 again, which is just crazy. But she had her chances, and just like I said, the most jarring one was, I think it was on hole 16 that she missed. There was like a literally yeah. like 20-footer. Evelina had just missed her birdie putt. It was a chance for her to cut it to like 2 strokes maybe, or 1 stroke. No, I think it was a chance to cut it to 2 at that point, with a few to play. I think it was hole 16. I think it was a chance to cut it to 2 with 2 to play, and she just clanked it. And you saw her demeanor.
Yeah.
You felt it as a fan. And that wasn't the only one. That was like the big one to me. Because, I mean, realistically, she came out 3 over through the first 5 holes. She plays those first 5 holes fine, which are easier holes compared to the rest of the course. She plays those fine. She wins this thing. So Kristin was a storyline. Also, Missy Gannon played really good the final round, 6-under final round yeah. to get to 1-under, but she was never in contention. And that was a player that really surprised me, because if you look at her history at Northwood, she seemed like a player that would have been almost one to beat out here and just yeah. never got her name in the hat.
It's like the difference between shooting 6-under and a few over can just be like, yeah, I got a little bit of a better, I didn't cut roll as much towards the OB fairway. You know, I missed that tree that I hit yesterday. Like, at that course, it is such, like, there is absolutely, you know, if you saw the players that were winning, they were keeping it in between the lines. You know, they were, you know, throwing the right shots. But there is just always going to be an element of just chaos on a course like that, and just things happening that are outside of your control. And so the margin between a really bad round and a really good one can be thinner than at any other course. It's not just going to be like, oh, I just missed a few putts today that I shouldn't have made. No, it's going to be some weird stuff usually.
Now, I got to ask you this, because on debate night, you had a take that FPO courses should become easier to create more drama-filled finishes.
Yeah.
After watching this weekend, do you still feel the same way?
So my take was based off of the idea that it would bring in more of the bottom of the field. After watching this event, and Brody actually briefly mentioned that, and I was kind of like, oh, interesting. But after watching this event, I do think that playing at uber difficult courses like this does like maybe bring the top of the field, like keep them clumped more together. Here's the problem, though, is the woods situation there is unique, because a lot of times the way they create difficulty for the FPO on the courses they're going to be playing most of the time is distance. And I don't think that's going to achieve the effect that I want. I think that actually could make it worse potentially. I do think that anytime you are playing Northwoods, like, you could play this event so many times and I think you would get a different outcome like every single time. You would see certain players who are going to perform here probably better than others, but there is so much randomness to it. There's such a mental battle to be fought out there. You can just, your round can crumble so quickly that, you know, I do think there is like a little bit of a weirdness to it, but I think this event did accomplish, you know, I've been talking about FPO wanting it to be more interesting, and this event accomplished that. Look at that leaderboard. It's very stacked in there towards the top. There were a lot of players in contention. This is what I would like to see out of FPO. So what's to be brought from this? I don't know, because like I said, this event is such an outlier. We're not going to see anything the rest of the year that it looks anything like that. Like, it's just so different. I would say the closest thing we get is honestly when they play that Nevin course sometimes at the finale, because like that a lot of times is very difficult and very tightly wooded for a lot of the course. But yeah, I don't know. It could be a route to go, and I'm sure it would make people, you know, at least people at the top of the field would feel better about that than them just making the courses easy to bring people in. So I'm not opposed to that idea, but I'd be curious to know, like, because they're not going to change the OB line specifically for FPO. So if you're looking at the layout really, like I said, the only way to do it is to move the basket further, probably, or maybe move it tighter to OB. But it could create more of these clumps where we're seeing like the best players really did rise to the top of this leaderboard. Like, I think the event succeeded in that. We got Evelina to win, and other really good players in contention with a few outliers, but that's expected and good for storylines. So I think this event succeeded in doing that, and I'm sure people enjoyed watching it. People do love the Woods, and I liked watching it too. I couldn't watch that event over and over again.
Yeah. It almost bodes to the FPO needs to just be on different courses.
Yeah. Shocker. If you tailor-made the courses to that division, you would get better results. Yeah, that's just the truth, yeah.
Now, to your other point of, like, the cream rose to the top, like, if you sort by rating, which obviously isn't the best way to sort by skill, but it's what we got right now, if you sort by rating, we'll go highest rated down. Basically, you have Kristen came in fifth. Own came in second. Missy came in seventh. Evelina, one. Haley King, outlier, 32nd.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck's going on with Haley King. Holland Hanley, 10th. Hannah Blomroos, 2nd. Ella Hansen, 7th. Valerie Mandahano, 10th. Heidi Line, 9th. Natalie Ryan, 13th. Like, that's all the, like, there's one, Cat Merch, 47th, 962. That's all the 960 and above. They basically, there's 12 of them that make that up, and they pretty much make up the top 12.
I would say that's like, yeah, there's just a few that were...
There's a few that like snuck in, like Rachel Turton at 940 snuck in there, Silver Saarinen at 953 snuck in there, but beyond that, like everyone, like the cream rose to the crop.
And like...
Cream rose to the top.
Cream of the crop.
I think it's cream rose to the top. It's like when you're doing buttermilk.
When an event is a little bit different and out there, and like I mentioned, it was a little rough, like there was a lot of people getting crushed in the woods, if that leaderboard looked really weird and none of the good players were really at the top, then I would probably have complaints about it. I'd be like, okay, this event was fluky, is that word would start to be thrown around. But when you see that and all the best players in the world had a chance to win, that shows that the course was a good demonstration of skill to an extent that was needed, and that works out. Obviously, we're talking about MPO. We got a unpredictable winner, but there were still a lot of really good players that we would expect near the top of the leaderboard. So I think that while there is definitely an element of luck when anytime you're playing in that thick of woods, there's always going to be an element of luck no matter where you go. But there was enough of a test of skill to bring good players towards the top, give them chances to win. And a lot of the mistakes they had made on any course.
Yeah. So let's go into MPO here. Presnell's first top 10.
Presnell. I don't like who is that act? Like, that's got to be it, right? Because everybody was saying that on the commentary booth.
Presnell?
Yeah, they were all saying Andrew Presnell. Like, they were
like, his nickname's Pretzel. And the only reason his nickname got to be Pretzel is because his last name, Presnell, sounds like pretzel.
I mean, I'm not going to say Presnell. I was just doing it for
it's a Pretzel.
Pretzel.
Yeah. Nah.
I don't know. I think Terry Miller just tries really hard to be correct on pronunciation.
Which I respect.
And, like, Presnell looks like the correct way to pronounce it. But, like, everyone says Presnell.
Really?
Well, it's N-E-L-L.
I would just say, it's just the
enunciation. Well, like, how would you pronounce N-E-L-L?
I would say Presnell. No. But I wouldn't say, I would say Presnell. He was saying Presnell. Like, he was,
I think
like
he was trying,
hitting.
I think he probably says Presnell.
Instead of
Nell.
And
was trying to say Nell.
Maybe.
Mm. Like, he was trying to make sure it's right. I feel like that's how they say, like, Niklas. They say it, like, a little weird.
Niklas.
Yeah, like, they try really Niklas. Hard to be right.
Yeah.
On,
yeah.
Which you should as a commentator.
Like, Tatar.
Yeah, Tatar.
Not us, though.
Not us.
Like,
Kristen Tater and Andrew President.
Hunter Tumis, joined by Trevor Stube and
Gerard Butler.
So, Presnell's first top 10 at a major also happened to be his first win, which is a fun stat.
He won Mid-America, you snake.
His first major win.
His first win.
I'm just going his first win.
Okay.
It wasn't a Pro Tour win. It's a major. Same thing like a Silver, it wasn't a Pro Tour win.
Yeah.
Got to be a Pro Tour to be a Pro Tour win.
That's right.
I'll just go over kind of like what the event happened, and then we'll go into some storylines. So Casey White came off hot start, 7-under after round one, was sitting at 11-under after round two. Interesting thing that happened here that I don't know if it's ever happened on any other course or ever will is that the lead stayed at 11-under after round three. It
crazy.
Didn't move. Casey just struggled on the back nine and fell, and Andrew Presnell was able to take the outright lead. Lead card was full of no major champions with Andrew Presnell, Ezra Robinson, Joseph Anderson, and Niklas Antola. And chase card looked like what you almost would expect the lead card to be with Casey White, Calvin Heimberg, Chris Dickerson, and Ricky Wysocki. So you knew it was going to be an interesting day. Ricky came out firing, absolutely on fire, but then fell off. And Presnell really only got shaken bad once, which was hole five when he threw his putter over the basket on a birdie look into the creek OB leading into a bogey, which also led to the loss of his only putting putter, which is an interesting situation that we'll talk about a little bit.
Dude, I respect it.
And then down the stretch, he just did what he had to do, most notably birdieing the stretch of 15 to 17, gave himself a four-stroke lead going into 18, and walked home. So let's talk some Presnell first off. Okay. Not shocking, to be honest, that he won this event. Like, that he won a major.
Okay, Big Hunt.
This event lines up. It makes sense. He's always been one of the greatest fairway hitters of all time. He's always been, like, that's his game.
It's not shocking that he won, though. He has no top like, 20s this year, I don't think. I think he has, like, no, he has, I don't think he has top 15s.
I'm saying if he was going to win an event this year, this is the one.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
I'll take
like,
that.
Like,
I'll take that.
When I saw his name pop up, it didn't make me go, oh,
I still, like, okay.
When Casey White held the lead for two rounds, I was surprised.
But let me ask you this. If you were making a list of most likely people to win this event, how far down would he be on the list?
Oh, he'd probably been like 10th or 11th, maybe even farther. But I think
he had to be further than 10th or 11th.
Okay, well, let's just go. Most likely to win, I would have put Ricky up top.
You would have put Ricky,
Calvin,
Gannon.
Isaac. I wouldn't put Gannon or AB.
You better not cap, because
I wouldn't put Gannon or AB above him.
You're psycho. There's no way. I would have bet $100,000 before his name was all in our mouths. Now nobody was thinking about
it. I think
Presnell.
I said it on the preview show. I don't think to win.
If you did, pull that clip up. I'll give
you credit.
I don't
think to win, but
I'll give you credit.
I think I said he was a guy to look out for because it makes sense. He's always been a fairway guy. I think it was when you said, why isn't Gannon, why do you not think Gannon? I said because the power thing. I said, I think this course plays more to Presnell than so and so.
If you said that, then maybe you just think of Presnell more than I do, but he just, like, I mean, he's never a threat out
whenever
there.
I think of Presnell, I think of when I tweeted from Foundation's account, what's the greatest fairway hit?
No, that popped into my mind too.
Time, and he responded with me.
That did pop into my mind when he was winning. I was like, he did say he was the fairway guy.
But what I'm saying is, like, if you look at this season, and if you were given Andrew Presnell and you said, put him into what event could he win?
If somebody told
this
me,
is like the only one you plug him in.
If somebody
in,
could
like.
Tell the future and said, Presnell's going to win this year, guess which one he won? I would have probably,
that's
this
what I'm saying,
been the one high on my list.
Yeah,
yes.
Like that would. That's why it wasn't shocking to see this is the event he did it at.
Yeah.
Is that more what
I
I'm
was
saying?
Still shocking that he won an event, a major,
yeah,
to me.
His game just, what it really came down to is his game just aligned with how you have to play this course. He never goes outside of his what he's capable of.
He's got,
which
that
is what I think leads to him not winning a lot of courses, is because, like, he doesn't have elite distance.
No.
He's not the greatest putter you've ever seen in your life. Like, he's not the greatest at anything, but he plays old man golf.
He's got that
very
half
well.
Reach back, like, ultimate frisbee heave. And here's the thing, though.
He's just good at it.
He was, his height control, his angle control, and his lines were all perfect. And, like, that was the recipe, right? Like, he just was keeping it in between the trees. And there are probably a lot of guys who might look back at this event and be like, oh. Because, like, there are other players that are capable of playing disc golf that way. They're not willing to.
Well, I think every time
Andrew Presnell is willing to play disc golf that way.
I think every time you leave Northwood. Now, normally we only play two rounds out here, but for Worlds, they played three, I think. But, like, anytime you leave Northwood, I think if you told the top players in the world all you had to do was this, they'd be like, I could do that with my eyes closed.
Right.
But that's just not how it works out. Because, like, Presnell won at 15 under through four rounds.
It's crazy.
That's, if you shoot four under a round average, you win by one.
Yeah.
In that scenario. Yeah. And, like, if you told Ricky, Calvin, heck, even Isaac Robinson going into the week, he struggled, but Isaac's brother turned it up. Like, if you told Paul, a lot of them, like, all you gotta do is just four under. And, like, if they game planned and picked, like, well, I can get, like, Ricky was, what was he, five under on the front eight right there?
Yeah.
And Paul started, like, five under through six.
Because even we thought winner was gonna get to probably, like, 20.
I think 20, I said, was
weather
the number.
Weather came in. We probably would have been good without the weather.
I said 20, you win it, which was right.
Yeah.
Not a wrong take.
True.
20, you would have won it.
True.
But if you told these guys, like, you just got to go out and just shoot four under a round. Like, I think they could game plan a way to do that, but that's just not what it feels like. Because what's interesting about disc golf for top pros is there's not really a hole on tour that any top pro steps on the tee pad and can't birdie, which makes it really hard for that not to be like, well, why wouldn't I at least throw a tee shot where I could?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Versus Presnell. I don't know if there are holes or not, but, like, there might be holes where he can't birdie,
he
and he's just like,
not,
this is what I'm going to do.
He did not make worse than a single bogey
the entire
round, entire event.
Entire weekend.
That
yeah.
shouldn't be possible at that course. Like, that is, insane. And it's because if he got into trouble, he pitched out and he kept the disc in the middle of the fairway.
He played golf.
He made the putts he had to. It was like, it was just simple, simple man's golf. And that's what won that event. And other, by time the other players probably realized that, it's too late. You're behind him. And now you have to try to catch up. And playing catch up, it's just like, you do not want to be caught behind late in that race, right? Like, you have to jockey around and get yourself into the lead or close to it at the end of that tournament, because by time it gets to those last like 5-6 holes, you're going to be trying to push, you're going to make bogeys, and the leader is not. The leader is just going to, once he gets past some of those like 12 and 14, some of those really icky holes, he's just going to be coasting, because he's going to be throwing these, I mean, he was throwing just the safest, like silliest shots, and they were great shots in that moment. They were the shots he needed. And granted, I will give him credit, though. He did make some very key birdies and threw some really great shots.
And some great putts down
the stretch. There were times where he had to hold off players. I mean, that we'll talk about. We got to talk about the Anheuser putt. Anheuser putt gate. Because that putt, it was on 17?
16. The one where he fell?
16? That was 16? Yeah. Was it 16?
You're talking about the putt where he fell?
It was the par 4, yes.
No, it was par 3.
16 is the par 3?
Yeah. Are we talking about the same putt? Are you talking about the falling putt? No, 16, I'm pretty sure. He was on the edge of the woods, threw a putt from
which
like...
Which hole is 17? 17 is also a par 3?
17 is the other par 3. 16 is the one down the hill, over the ravine, wooden thing.
Okay.
He was in the woods on the right.
You're right. I remember now. So he gets off to the right, throws his Anheuser putt in. That was like insane. And like, I mean, Antela made his putt, which kept him in it, but like that was where there was supposed to be. You saw his drive kick off, and you saw Antela's, you're like, okay, this is where the move's going to be made. I was thinking, Antela's going to get back in this. Makes this putt, which was insane, but the PDGA has him at 30 feet. Nobody really, you can't see any markers. That's an issue. And he throws his putt, kind of wobbles, looks like he's trying to hold his balance, and then falls forward. And the commentators did a good job like trying to get to the bottom of it. And now, first thing I want to say is the PDGA saying it's 30 feet means nothing.
No.
That
was just a scorekeeper.
Because there was no clear marker out there. So that's just a scorekeeper. That we cannot hold that as like the truth. They ask Brian, they're asking this, and like I think it came out that there was a conversation. Here's my biggest thing though. If you know before the putt that you are
outside the circle,
outside, why do you try that hard to keep your balance? It's not that, and I'm not even accusing him of anything, because like he may have just like not even been trying to throw a falling putt, and it just so happens that he kind of fell forward. But it just looked like a guy who was putting from inside the circle, tried to hold his balance, and then didn't.
No, that's exactly what it looked like.
End of the day, nobody called it. So I'm not going to say Presnell cheated or anything. I'm not saying that,
because end of the day, no one called it, and if no one calls it, it's not a foot fault. That's how the game works. But it was very interesting optic wise, because you couldn't tell. From if you just showed me the putt before he threw it, I probably would have guessed outside the circle.
But then they showed the drone putt, the drone replay, and he looked pretty close.
But what I'm saying is,
I need some analytics.
What convinces me that it wasn't was like how hard he tried
to
keep balance.
Stumble,
and see.
Man.
Like, you
I need
don't
to look
do
at him more.
That if you're if you know you're outside the circle, like. I've just never tried to keep my balance outside the circle for no reason.
Yeah, I don't know. And maybe there was a puddle in front of him that he wasn't trying to step in. Like,
maybe.
I don't have the details.
He also won by 4, so stroke him, and he still wins.
I think that argument's a little poor, though, because, like...
Well, yeah, Niklas...
It would have got to, like, within 1, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well...
I think so.
2. Oh, no, if he... Because it...
I think birdie, if he
It's
goes,
hard, because Niklas bogeyed the next hole, and I'm trying to do math backwards, where he would have been at.
You got this.
So you take 2 off. He puts him at 13. Yeah, it would have been 1.
Yeah.
1 stroke with 2 to
and
play.
That's a little scary. Because that's the thing is, Presnell never had to quite get, like late in that round, it never got, ooh, this is real close. 1 little slip up and your lead's gone. He always had that little cushion.
Yeah.
But like I said.
But you mean,
the carb was there. Nobody said anything.
He went
so.
Bogey on 12, birdie on 13, bogey on 14, birdie, 15, 16, 17, and then 18, it was done. He was up by 4. Literally on 18, I don't think you could lose 4 strokes.
I'm going to have to start playing Presnell golf. That little like that half reach back and just like kind of a little bit air balance.
Is Presnell golf the new Sexton golf?
No. Because Presnell's not as good as Sexton.
Good question.
And also Sexton has a dirty forehand.
So let's talk let's talk situation 1 really quick. Because that was situation 2 I wanted to bring up. But situation 1, where hole 5 again throws it over the basket, goes into a creek, putter's gone. That's the only putter of that mold in his bag.
Yeah.
So his caddy takes off running back to the car to grab another one. That is allowed within the rules.
It shouldn't be.
That's what I was about to ask. why is that allowed within the rules, and should it be?
You should not be allowed. If you lose a disc, that, and I believe that in golf, the rule is if you lose a club, break a club, that's that. Like that's,
well, also, if you run out of balls, that's that.
And if you run out of balls, that is also that. So definitely the club one stands. And I think that should just be part of the game. I think that that's part of your strategy. Now, I will say this. I don't care as much about the rule because there's no limit on how many discs you can have.
Yeah.
If there was a rule, that, like golf, you have a limit of clubs. So therefore, breaking one is a little more important because there's strategy. If there was a limit on how many discs you had in your bag, you would already see players strategize more as to like, okay, I need to make sure if I lose this, I have a backup. Like that would play into it. And then I would care more about this rule existing because then it would be like, well, now if you don't have an extra putting putter, you might be kind of silly on a course with water on it. But I care less. I still think it shouldn't be allowed because I think it's like,
well, the weird thing to
me, you just got to prepare for this stuff. But I care less because like you can have guys out there with Zuka sponsorships and like double tiered carts with 80 discs.
The weird part to me is if you're someone who doesn't have a caddy, you're screwed. Like if Presnell doesn't have a caddy,
you got to hand the fob to a guy in the gallery.
You're probably
that
handing your key to some random dude and like, don't steal my car. I need the black putter.
I would have just loved to watch him have to putt the rest of that round with the drone.
That's what I'm saying. I think he had a throwing putter of some type, but like whatever he putts with, he only had that.
Listen, I understand because like as a guy who also only has one putting putter in his bag, like any day could be the one where I got to finish out with the driver and
any
putt
day
the
could
same
be
percentage. Yeah.
Well, you have throwing putters.
Only premium ones, though. Only premium ones. So, like, I probably let's play this game. You guys, if you lose,
I want to lose both my bangers. I got a PA3 waiting for me.
Okay, but let's say you don't have the PA3. Like, what's your next line of defense?
I always have a baseline throwing putter because that's, I like to take a neutral putter and beat it up.
Okay, let's go to your second stringer then, because I'm just curious.
So I've lost three putters.
I'm curious
now
to see what you would go to.
EMAC Judge.
Point.
I putted phenomenal.
So you would go to the premium putter.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think
as a spin putter,
I have three wizards that are all the same plastic in my bag because two are putting and one is for like upshots and throws.
Yeah, I'd have to lose a lot. I'd have to have a really weird putting day.
I'm trying to think like what disc I would turn to.
Well, after you lose your candy, what are your other putters?
Well, I have the P3X right now and the Shaman, but they're premium, and premium for me is a no go. So like I might go to the classic hard slammer.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like that might be where I go next. Yeah, if I had a rock in my bag, like if I had a KC rock, I'd probably go to that
over the slammer.
Yeah, yeah.
That just seems like a poor choice.
Well, it doesn't really change my putting. It feels more comfortable in my hand.
The Shaman does not feel good for putting.
No,
it's not good.
I never understood people who put. I haven't messed with a Shaman too much, but I feel like it's a similar shade to the PA4. I never understood people that putt with a PA4.
Yeah, the Shaman is like less comfortable than a PA4.
No, I putt it with a Magic, and a Magic is very similar to both.
Yeah, I didn't understand that
either.
I
like it. Yeah, I liked it.
Didn't like
just
it.
Felt comfy in my hand. That's what it's all about for me because I'm not good at putting, so I can't get to the point of like, how does this thing fly? It's all about, does it feel good in my hand? That's all I care about. That's why I'm decent with putting with drivers.
So Presnell takes us down. Let's actually look at Presnell's season so far.
I looked at it yesterday. It started out pretty well.
He went 17th at Chess.
And then it got worse, and then he decided to win.
17th at Chess, 23rd at Waco, 24th at Open at Austin, 46th at Texas States, 51st at Jonesboro, 17th at Music City, first at Champions.
I feel like
Cup.
It's been a good Presnell season. Like, yeah, I said, it's funny that he started hot, had like a couple bad events, and then had a decent one and then won.
So what does this major do for his career?
So my opinion is it's very similar to Barsby. Obviously, we saw the Barsby stat. He's the lowest rated player to win. There's the ratings again. Lowest rated player to win a major since Barsby, who was even lower rated. He was 10-20 when he won, but there's ratings inflation. Anyways. I think that this, and I think he has a little bit less notoriety than Barsby's always had a little bit of like an old school rep to him. You know, in of a guy. I think Presnell, like, guys know him, but like he's never like had a huge brand. And I think this is like one of two things, right? Like, this could be a launch pad for him if he continues to play well. But I'm totally in the boat that like this could be. If this is just like he kind of goes back to normal Presnell, this will be something we talk about. Like, oh, like who won? Wait a second. Who won in 2024 Champions Cup? Was it Paul? No, it wasn't Paul. Oh, I think it was Calvin. No, no. Oh, we Google it. It's Presnell. That's right. I forgot Presnell. Like, that's the conversation we'll be having 3 years from now.
Mm.
If like normal. And that's that's just how sports works. Like that, if you tell people to name the Masters winners, when they get
Rory McIlroy can do a dirty job.
Well, I'm just saying though, when you get to
he went back to the '80s.
When you get to these certain winners, the Trevor Immelmans and such, like the guys that aren't the big ones, there are guys that was their peak of their career, and that's it, and that's awesome for them. But like this. That can just be what it is. Like, we are in a sport now where there can be pop-up winners, that's what happens for them. But I think this is more about Presnell than it is about the fan perception. For him, what is that going to do for him, like, confidence-wise? If this could create a launch pad for him and how he feels about his game and how he feels like, now I can win, I think that's way more important to, like, what it's going to do for his career outside of that. Because, like I said, there's going to be it's a pop, it's going to fizzle, and then we're not going to talk about it unless he continues playing well.
Well, I'll tell you, this I think is going to be big for his career because it should get his tour series drone back.
Yes, monetarily it can help him a lot.
It should be a good negotiating tool. I mean, Corey Ellis won European Open last year. Now, Corey Ellis, his game aligns more with the current Pro Tour, like where the Pro Tour's headed, right? But at the end of the day, like Corey Ellis is, that might have been the first time I mentioned him this year. I don't really know if I've talked about him much. Like if you don't continue to win and continue that dominance that you showed this week, then it's a flash in the pan. It is what it is. Yeah. But it does, like, now Corey Ellis' name will forever be a major champion. Yeah. Same thing with Greg Barsby. Like, it gets you certain things in disc golf on the contract side, and that, like, It just comes with it. Whether you move plastic or not, like, you make more money if you're a major champion behind the scenes. Will that be true 10 years from now? I don't know. But where disc golf is right now, like, if you hold a major title, you make more money because you're a major champion.
Think about, like, if you're discraft, and I'm not trying to dog on Presnell, but, like, think about, like, being a discraft, you have this stacked team you got to pay, and it's, like, a guy who you was, like, safely on the lower team, like, wins a major, and you're like, dang. Like, I got to add another person to the elite team. I don't really have a choice. Hands are tied. And, like, there's nobody I want to take off. It's one thing if you got somebody you're ready to sub out.
Well, it's also,
like,
a little tough.
Oh, man.
It's also a little tough because, he's probably the commemorative disc for Champions Cup is probably going to be a drone.
I want one.
The drone doesn't have that. And they just came out with the drone killer, the Swarm.
That is true.
Or whatever it's called.
That's tough.
Like, Presnell, if you listen to this podcast, I don't know if you do, this is your chance to rebrand. Put your name on the Swarm.
Try and get
you will
it,
sell so many more because there's a already, hype around
well,
it right
also,
now.
Already, they've got Paige Pierce stamped on 10,000 of those things already, man. There's
I
no
didn't,
way.
I wasn't going to say her name, but since you did, what the heck happened, Paige?
She took a billion out
she
there.
She missed the cut at 22 over par. She lost by 30.
We done with the 90s, man.
I thought Paige was going to have a rocky start, but I thought we'd at least get back to Paige, like...
Like what, dude?
Like, at least being in the top 10 or something. Like, I didn't think she was going to win every week, but, like, at least, like... Her floor fell out from under her.
The Paige Pierce fall off needs to be studied, because
But Paige's floor at least used to be, like... She was still around. Like, she wasn't... She might not be winning, but, like, her floor is gone.
I genuinely liked watching Paige Pierce play. Like, I really did. I'm bummed that... Like, I so badly want Paige and Kat and Haley and all these players, I want them to be at their best because they are exciting to watch when they are, and I want to see more of them contend. And also our American pride. I mean, come on now. We're getting just stomped on, the Europeans, man. We got to get ready for Champions Cup, or not Champions Cup, President's Cup next year. But, I mean, they've just been bad.
I just don't get it. I don't get it because they have shown us Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Kristen.
I don't understand.
Haley King, Holland Handley, Ella Hansen, Henna, Evelyn. Like, they've all shown us what they're capable of at different points in their career.
I just don't get why
the only one that is consistently good is Kristen. But, like,
disrespect Owen like that.
I didn't put Owen in the category because Owen is like Owen's like Sexton, I feel like, where she's just, Owen will get a win by it coming to her. You know what I mean? Like, Haley and them.
She won by like 12 this year.
Haley and them, though, when their game is at its best, like, when you see what Haley King, if you watch Haley King throw,
really good,
and you watch her throw, it's like, if she could do that every time, one would touch it. Like,
she's throwing in the wrong direction, man.
But I just don't, that's what I say, is like, what? Like, I will never accuse anyone of, like, their practice routine
or
anything
like
that.
It seems like she puts a lot of work into it, too.
How? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
80% of the game takes place in your noggin, buddy. It's got to be. But and like, here's the thing.
Even Kona Panis had a ton of potential.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's all in your head. It's all in their
heads.
It's
crazy.
What is crazy to me is not really that they're not competing for wins, it's that their floor has gotten so low. Because, like,
yeah,
I just
Haley
feel like.
Haley King was 20. Like, where's Haley at? 23 over par this
weekend.
I just
feel like Paige Pierce or Haley King should be able to go out there and be like, okay, I'm just going to try and shoot even par for the tournament and, like, just. They should be like they are talented enough disc golfers to do that. Maybe they're just going out every week still thinking like maybe they're just thinking like, okay, this is going to be the one where I get the win and everybody's like, oh my gosh, I was wrong about them. They're back. Maybe they just need to go and be like, okay, I'm going to take a top 10. Like I'm going to try and finish in the top 10 and just track the top 10. 10th place is your win.
Yeah,
and maybe they
know.
Need to go in like that because like there's no way Paige Pierce and Haley King aren't talented enough at throwing a disc to get around these courses more efficiently. I just don't know. Yeah, it's in the head.
That's what I'm saying.
It's all in the head.
It's mind-boggling.
Like, it's a sport that takes mental aptitude.
Now, another major has come and gone without Calvin Heimberg taking down his first or Ricky breaking his streak. There was actually an interesting stat on PDGA stats when Ricky was on his hot streak. They tweeted this, which was days between Ricky Wysocki's first major start and his sixth major win.
They do this last year, too.
But now it's gotten interestinger.
It's gotten better. Interestinger.
First major stat, sixth major win was 2,454 days. Now his days since his sixth major win is 2,499 days.
It's greater than
it's
now.
Been more days since Ricky's last major win than it took him to get to six.
That's crazy.
From his first major start.
Yeah, that's crazy. Different eras, man. Different
7
eras.
Years. I mean, this was
Ricky is having a pretty flat season so far.
It's just
be very careful, man.
He came in third. Let's just be clear
no,
here.
He's having okay season. He just hasn't got the win yet.
He's went second at Chess, 10th at Waco, 17th at Texas State, 12th at Jonesboro, 3rd at Music City, and then 3rd at Champions Cup.
He's been such
Cup.
A good like early season player in years past. I've just been waiting and waiting for him to get one.
I really thought this was the tournament that was going to break his streak, and I even thought it 8 holes into the final round. I mean, he was hitting circle 2 putts. He looked like vintage Rick. He looked dialed. It looked like if you talked to him, he was going to snap at you because he was so focused. And then the back nine came, and like he just
Rick and Calvin are cursed,
the air
man.
Just went out.
Rick and Calvin are cursed, bro. Like, it is like...
Like, he was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 under through the front 8, and then went 1 over, 2 over, 1 over, 2, 3, 2, 1 over on the back 10.
Well, the crazy thing is, too, is, like, how many players are going to get their first major before Calvin does? You can go ahead
let's add
Andrew Presnell to that list.
So, this tweet, these are the last 6 major winners with MPO major win number. So... Champions Cup major winner was Andrew Presnell. It was his first. 2023 USDGC, Kyle Klein, it was his first. Pro Worlds 2023 was Isaac Robinson's second because 2023 Champions Cup was Isaac Robinson's first. European Open last year, Corey Ellis's first. USDGC 2022, Gannon Burr first. So, like, everyone's...
There's going to be a lot of that.
The last 6 majors have been won by someone who their first major win came that year.
Yeah. I mean, Paul and Rick, I'd love to know the percentage of major tournaments that Paul and Rick won between 2012 and, like, 2019. It had to be very high. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, now that they're finally settling down a little bit, there's going to be a lot of people that are just finally able to start building a major total. And also just so many young guys right now that are coming up that are just going to – they're going to win majors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this was also the return of Eagle McMahon. Did not go – I mean, it depends on how your expectations were for Eagle.
He didn't DNF.
Because he played 3 rounds of golf. He ended in 90th place. It was his first ever missed cut of his career, he said in a video on his YouTube channel. And he shot 26 over.
And beat Tristan Tanner, though.
But he did some encouraging things from this. He did on that YouTube video say that, like, the only weird stiffness-type pain, anything he felt was his back. His arm, his body, everything felt good all weekend, which is that's a win. That's a W if you're an Eagle fan. That's a win if you're Eagle. It seemed like if you want to put an excuse on something, it seemed like a lot of it came down to really rust. This was his first tournament back. And he had been doing a lot of his playing and practicing in Colorado. So he was learning his bag at elevation and then came down to earth, if you will.
Which I will say
and, here. That is drastically
now
different.
That we went out to elevation and got to experience that firsthand, it was confusing for me as well. I think if you're Eagle, here's the good news is you got it out of the way. It can't get any worse than this, really.
How long is his window before you're like, okay, you should be back now? How many tournaments you give him?
Well, so we have...
I don't know if he's playing DDO.
Then OTB.
Yeah, I don't know if he's playing DDO or not. He was talking like he was going back home in that video I watched, but I thought he was playing DDO.
What's he have on there at least?
OTB's is next. So May 17th, OTB Open, and then the Portland Open 2 weeks after that.
I think Portland is probably, that makes sense to be kind of the homecoming, right? So give him a week of rest, another warm-up at OTB, and he could be a threat already at OTB, very open course. I think, I'm going to call it this, week of rest, week of confidence building, I think he's a threat at Portland.
Okay, so if he, because OTB is, again, when OTB happens, what finishing place would you give him of like, ooh, it should have been better? Like anything?
I think he should be inside of the top 20 at OTB.
Okay, yeah. So OTB, you're already back to top 20, Portland back to a threat.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take long. Like I said, this course is, I mean, imagine that. Trying to come off an energy, new discs, lower elevation, that course, major, four rounds, boom, tough weather. Like,
not only three for him, but.
Three rounds. Yeah. But like that's brutal. So like, I'm not taking much from that.
You could pick a worse tournament to come back to be honest with you.
I think like you're going to go out, you're going to get a rest, you're going to go to OTB and be able to watch your discs fly through the air.
Which is important.
And you're going to learn a lot more, and you're probably going to shoot a hot round out there, or a really nice one. And then you're going to go to Portland, a tournament that you've been really good at before. As long as you know which disc rolls on the ground, you're going to have some success out there. And then, yeah.
Well, I think what's hard is like it's really hard to learn a bag when if a disc flips up and it flips into a tree, you don't know what the rest of that flight
did
looked
it flip
like.
Over? Like we don't know.
So then you get to a different hole and you're like, well, this one flipped before, but then you find out that it was going to flip and like burn, not flip and cruise. Like, that's a really hard spot to learn a bag.
And
so,
you can just tell from the in the bag that he did, he's still got like one of every mold in his bag. Like he's not nearly decided on what he really likes yet. And he hasn't had time to season them in. Like there's a lot, I'm sure there's a lot of decision making because he's a mold minimalist guy. Like,
typically,
Eagle, he would carry a ton of MD3s back in the day.
I feel like MVP throwers aren't really mold minimalist kind of people.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see.
I think it takes a little bit to beat them in. Like, yeah, I haven't really ever got a like super beat up MVP disc.
I don't. Yeah, every time you don't.
Other than like some baseline like proxies and
you
stuff.
Don't typically carry a bunch of one MVP.
That's
disc
what I'm saying. Like my hexes start like a flip up, and like I've had them get to flip up and ride a little bit. That's it.
Hey, and maybe if you're confident enough in the consistency of their plastic. Because it is very consistent that you're just like, I don't need to do mold minimalist. Like, they feel fine and, you know.
Yeah. So, the final thing, we got to just get back to score-wise. 15 under winning a four-round major is crazy. When I did my, like, day three recap live, a lot of people were asking for the major to regularly come to Northwood Park, Northwood Black. You know, people were coming after us in the preview show for calling it Northwood Park. If you go to the PDGA or calling it Northwood Black, they were saying it's Northwood Park. It's not Northwood Black anymore. If you go to PDGA, why don't you just hover over one of the rounds and you tell me what the frick
it's
called?
Yeah, that's funny. It seems like the PDGA are calling it Northwood Black.
Yeah, it looks like it's still Northwood Black. I understand they added golden and like why it's not that, but I like the changes there.
It also
there,
sounds
but,
more scary. We're just trying to give it some cred, man.
But people are wanting a major to regularly come back here.
Yeah.
Yes, no, thoughts, opinions?
I mean,
should Champions Cup be moved to Northwood?
I don't think so. Well, it all depends on what they are able to accomplish at W.R. Jackson, right? Like, what does that course even look like? Like, I do think, well, I wouldn't be disappointed. If they said it, I'd be like, okay, like, that's fine. Here's the thing, though. I do not want it to be the major course, and then they still play two rounds there at Ledgeton every year. That I do not want. So if that's going to be the case, I don't want that. If this were just the exclusive prison that we sent the Pro Tour to every year for one major, okay, fine. Then I think that's kind of the idea. Now, I would say that would be interesting because then we'd have two majors with kind of a like emphasis on you're going to get crushed out there, USDGC in a different way.
I think they'd feel different enough that that'd be okay.
They definitely looked a lot different, absolutely. But I don't know if the players feel different. Like, do we want two majors? Because a lot of players walk out of USDGC feeling just gut checked, but they kind of like concede to the fact that it's a historical tournament, but they do not like what happens to them out there on the course. And I'm sure a ton of people come out of Northwoods, some of them already posted about it, being like, that was the worst thing ever, like that was miserable.
Well, you can probably just look at the cut line and see where people landed on how they feel about Northwoods.
So I don't know if we want to have two of our majors be that brutal, but I don't, like I said, I can do one tournament like that. Really, realistically, what I'd like is maybe we don't go there, but like maybe we just make Ledgestone like that. I'm okay with having one tournament.
Yeah, I like the idea of Ledgestone turning into this. Okay, final thing we'll do with this tournament is I'm going to read some names of players that missed the cut. And I want you to try to guess their score.
Okay.
A little fun game. Instead of just down and being
like
this person.
I don't even know where the bottom of the leaderboard. I know where the cut was around.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm going to jump all over the cut.
Because I know what Brody was.
So I'm going to just kind of jump all over the cut and you guess this player's score. We'll start with Gavin Babcock.
Oh, probably wasn't good. Plus 18.
Plus 18. He plus 11.
Oh.
Okay. Chris Clements.
Oh, he was around for a little bit. Plus 13.
Plus 12. You were close there.
Oh, okay.
We'll give you, I'm trying to find some other names we would have expected to do better out here. Ooh, Evan Scott.
Which one is that, Trev?
Is he the good Evan?
Second. No, Evan Smith's the good one. He had an ace. Evan Smith had an ace. Got to see his face, put the name to the face. It's really good. plus 20.
19 over. You're getting good
actually
here.
Actually goaded.
Nico LiCastro.
Oh, plus 26.
14 over.
Oh.
Continue. Kevin Jones.
Oh, KJ? Plus 21.
14 over. Dang. For the last one, we'll do Drew Gibson.
Plus 17.
11 over.
Oh,
there you go. I figured that was a fun way to say these players missed the cut, and they surprised me. Maybe not surprised me that they missed the cut, but just a lot of big names missed the cut at Northwood.
You know who didn't miss the cut?
Brody, the Dark Horse.
Forever Dark, 21.
What sucks is he didn't miss the cut, but he did miss cash.
That does suck.
Because there was a big tie for...
That extra sucks. Yeah. You had to spend an extra day on that course and didn't even make cash. Yeah. That... It is the worst.
It was top 39 plus ties, and there was a big old tie for 39 that Brody was in.
Sucks, dude. Oh, that sucks.
Made the cut, missed cash. That does suck.
I mean, what's even the point? Oh, my gosh. That's awful.
That is brutal. All right, so Manufacturer Cup update before we hop into Trevor's trivia. Andrew Presnell win is the fourth win in 7 events for Discraft players. AB has the other 3. AB and Gannon both tied for 10th, continuing their streak of top 10 finishes. Joey Buckets tied 6th, moving Castblast back into the top 10. And Lone Star got their first point of the year with Robert Burridge top 10. So that brings
Let's go, Rob.
But it wasn't enough for them to crack into the top 10. The season top 10 for the Manufacturers Cup right now, Discraft extends their lead, earning 32 points. They are now at 242. Discmania holds on to second at 185. Enova rounds out the top 3 at 74. Then you have Dynamic Discs at 49. Prodigy Jumps MVP going up to 41, courtesy of a Robinson brother, but not the one you'd think. It was Ezra.
Maybe this year is the one I'd think.
MVP falls, earning 0 points. They're down to 35 points now. Westside's at 24.5, Mint's at 15, DGA's at 14, and Castplast enters the top 10 at 11 points.
Let's go, Castplast.
All right, it's time for the fan favorite segment.
Let's throw.
Trevor's Trivia.
You guys know that?
That's Jeopardy, right? Or no. What's the intro for
That's that Jeopardy. Steve Harvey. That's that Steve Harvey. You guys
Family Feud.
No.
That's what Steve
Harvey
is.
You guys
Harvey
are doing
is.
A bit, right?
Da, 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 da. I don't know. I know. I recognize it.
Da, 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 American Ninja da,
da,
Warrior.
Da, 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 da.
Is that a guy?
Do you know it? Thank you. Holy cow.
Drew Carey. What I was about to say
Bob
was...
Bob Barker, dude.
Drew Carey's on it now.
Frig Drew Carey.
Drew Barrymore?
Barstool did their NFL draft show.
Yeah.
NFL. And they had Frank the Tank playing the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do on the piano. I was like, that's hilarious. It's just like cut over, and he's just like do-do-do-do-do-do. So I think and a long way to say, we're going to put a keyboard in front of Connor, and when we go to like Trevor's Trivia, he's just going to play the theme song.
If we give Connor a keyboard, there will no longer be silence on this podcast.
No, there won't be.
Okay.
Fun, though.
I will underscore the whole thing.
Yeah. Price is Right. Playing Price is Right today. All of our items come in between the prices of $0 and $100. We have 5 items for you to guess. Closest.
$0 and $100?
Closest wins the item. What?
Wins zero the item. Let's go.
Yeah, I've got all of this. Yeah, $0 and $100. No, we're going to do it. We'll just go. We'll count your total money off and keep it close
closest
that way.
Closest about going over or just closest?
Just closest. Okay. All right. First item on the docket here. We have... A new... Is there all sold
Who's
items?
Going first?
Hunt can go first, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Sold items here. All have been sold. New autographed Big Germ and Yuli Jomez Pro Tour Series Jawbreaker Z Flex Cicada. So, Jomez had a Tour Series disc with Discraft this year, And this one's autographed by Big Germ and Yuli. The Z Flex Zaketa.
I have my number and I won't change it.
I'm going $30.
I'm going $75.
Wow.
Okay. Kind of surprised me low, kind of surprised me high with your guesses, and it's it kind of falls right in the middle. It is $55.
Connor's up by five.
So Connor, what up? Of 25 off right now.
No, it should 20, be 20, and I'm 25.
25 off.
I feel like.
I just think they're still available on their site. I feel like they just released them.
They're signed by.
Normally ink doesn't increase.
It's that much on the dot, though, it's like when Simon signs a time lapse, it does go up. Like it's
that much.
And also, like,
I made it go up by 10 bucks. I made it go up by $10.
That's fair.
You're right.
Okay, maybe I made it go.
You
five.
Also weren't that far off.
No, Hunter sucked.
Yeah.
Okay, next we have Discmania Lazat Lux Vapor Full Tilt Gray with Rainbow Shatter Stamp, brand new.
Connor's first guess.
$75.
I was thinking 80. Yeah, it's gonna be in that realm, so I'll just go 80.
The price is $40.
What?
What is happening?
Your lead goes to 10.
See, like,
guys, this game is depressing.
See, like, did something happen in the stock market?
Why do people care more about Big Germ and Yuli signing a like stock disc than a disc that you will never get again?
Because they don't. Yeah. History is just garbage to these people,
makes
man.
Makes no sense.
These eBay buyers. Okay, next we have talk about real recent history here.
Okay,
Discraft Swarm Test Flight from Champions Cup, brand new,
$90.
$82.
The price is $60.
I suck.
Okay, two more to go. It's not over yet. We got some very tough ones to finish here. Innova McPro AVR Paul McBeth signed back-to-back bottom stamp black.
Connor?
Brand new.
$6. I'm just kidding. This is one of those things where I feel like it should be way up there, but I've had my heart hurt by the Innova collectors too many times. But I'm going to stick at $65.
I was thinking $30.
The price is $95.
But, like, that makes sense, but why does nothing else make sense?
Yeah, that
I don't understand disc. I don't understand the disc marketplace. Because stuff like that one,
I don't either.
That one, if I went with my heart, yeah, that's probably like $100-some disc. But nothing else ever makes sense.
Last item. We have an Innova EcoStar Katana Old Run 2010 Pro Worlds Crown Point, Indiana in green.
There's so many buzzwords in there. Is it my first guess or yours?
Innova EcoStar Katana Old Run 2010.
I feel
2010,
like the
Pro
old
Worlds.
EcoStar green was like envied, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
I don't know, but that was like
the EcoStar color.
But like, I don't know if that was with katanas.
Yeah.
$75.
I was gonna say 35. I feel like
it's 40. Dude, Connor's dialed in, man. Hunter's on
I
wild goose chase
in.
That
I
whole time.
I was just
time.
Like a consistent like 5 or 10 closer.
I was just throwing numbers out there. None of them make sense to me.
Dude, the market is brutal, man. It is brutal. Or not, though. Like, if you're looking for the right thing, like, you can apparently. Guys, I saw an early. This is how it was
if
listed.
If you're a buyer, it's not brutal.
I saw this one that was listed. Early run G-Star Destroyer. And it was sold for $75.
Like how? Like this.
It just said early run.
How does that make sense? How does any of that make sense?
Like what did they dip the early run G Star in gold or something?
Dude, Hunter, I don't
it
know if it's still
like
out there.
It just looks like a G
Star
disc.
I don't know if it's still out there, but there is a like Discmania bar stamp G Star PD2.
It's the yellow one. That's been there for. Have you ever felt that?
I haven't seen it.
Okay,
I don't look at the wheels.
No, it's been in there for like. A year, I think.
It feels incredible.
There's no shot. I would have felt it by then.
Probably
I think
seen
I might
it.
Have
no.
to snag it.
I remember like looking through it with you, I think, a long time ago.
I've let time go by for too long.
There's no way it's been in there a year. There's actually no way it's been through a year.
Oh no, I've seen it a
lot. We've done so many used mystery boxes.
Here's what happened. Either it somehow left the box and ended up back in it, like maybe one of our guys took it and put it back, or it was bought and then lost again because I saw it in there a long, long time ago. It sat for a while because it was G Star. And then I didn't see it, and now it's back. Same disc. And how many of those can there really be around? Same color, same stamp. So maybe it got lost and refound.
I think something had to have happened because, like,
I bet it is awesome.
We've cycled through those things so many times.
I can't get myself to throw the G-Star, man. I tried, and it sucked.
Hot Take Hanum just reappeared out of literally nowhere on Twitter, on X, if you will. He just tweeted, after, I think it was after the first round. It might have been the second round. Doesn't really matter.
He had a bad day out
he
there.
He had a bad weekend out there for multiple reasons. But he tweeted out of the blue, "I get stroked today for being 12 seconds late, but PDGA is still allowing dudes to play FPO. Get your priorities and SHIT together at PDGA." Hot Take Hannum's back. Just threw his name out in there. The tough part here is I get where he's ticked off, right? Okay, I understand that. But how the rules currently sit, you're 12 seconds late. Like, the rules, there is an exact time that you're supposed to be there. It doesn't matter if you're 5 seconds later. He didn't get sympathy. I don't think he would have got sympathy, but the second part of his statement, well, the second part actually earned him more sympathy than he would have gotten with a lot of Twitter people, but also didn't help him at all with Twitter people.
That tweet ended up getting, like, I forget. I mean, I see you have it capped at 143,000.
Oh, this was like an hour after.
It has so many, dude. It got crazy on Twitter, man. I'm telling you right now.
That's one thing about Austin Hannum. He knows how to get the people riled up.
I don't get involved in those Hannum wars, but
I just quote tweeted and said, "Wow, what a return from Hot Take Hannum."
I want to know the 12 seconds thing. Like, did he have a stopwatch or
I don't know.
Or is that just one of those things where you're like, oh my gosh, like, seriously, it just turned. Like, I was 12 seconds. Like, how's
it
that
might have been a situation where they told him, like, you're late, and he looked down and was like, it's literally 10:24.
Okay, let's say your tee time is 5 o'clock. Do I need to be there at 5 o'clock in 59 seconds? Am I still on time? Or do you need to be there before it turns five?
5 minutes early. Okay. All the players know that. You need to be there at 4:55.
So 4:55 when it turns 4:55? Or
then
if I show
be there.
So as soon as it hits 4:55, that's when they look. Not when it hits 4:56.
Correct.
We got to know these things.
4:55 is like you have to be there. For instance, Ezra Robinson on lead card, final day. Chase cards teeing off. He was there waiting.
Which is pretty easy to do.
It's your
believe
job,
it or not.
Like, I mean, it's all of these players' jobs. Yeah. So you just have to show up.
But if you show up, this doesn't have much to do with this conversation at all. But if you show up at whenever you have a minute of 4:55, so if they say show up by 4:55, technically it's still 4:55. Whenever
no,
because
then it's 4:55:01, and then it's 4:55:02, and it's 4:55:03. Like, he showed up at 4:55:12.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
You had to show up at 4:55.
Or was it 4:56:12? We don't know what they're doing here. This is the important part of this whole topic.
I think we do. If I said you have to come and work at 7.
Okay,
if you show up at 7:01, are you late?
Yes.
Or if you show up at 7:10, 7 in 10 seconds, are you late?
No, not in my mind. Like,
in my mind, if I look at my watch and it's 7 o'clock,
I'm here. But when we sit at our meetings in the morning, we wait for it to turn 7:01.
No, as soon as it hits 7, someone's late.
We've never said that.
Yeah.
When we sit down, we look for it to turn 7:01 every single time.
Then they're a minute late.
Right, but if somebody walks in while it's still seven, I would consider them.
Let me ask
time.
You this:
I give them the 59
if
seconds.
If I'm meeting somewhere at 8 o'clock and I show up at 8:10, how late am I?
This is not the same question.
How?
Because I count them by ones. I don't count the seconds.
But am I 9 minutes late or am I 10?
You are 10 minutes late. If you show up at 7, but if you show up at 7:46, you don't have a clock that says how many seconds? How late are you? You don't know.
For so what time was I supposed to be there?
7. But you don't know how many seconds because you don't look at you're not looking at a clock that has seconds on it. So what are you going to show and be like?
As soon as it hits 7, I'm late.
But you don't know how late you are. So that's
but
what I'm
saying. But
you're
still late.
So to your previous question, like you're turning this into a math equation when it's more of a courtesy.
But I'm just saying
this is a courtesy.
No, this
question.
Is a rule. This is a like
no,
rule
for this,
on the
dot. For this I agree. I'm just saying, like, in general courtesy, I don't consider somebody late, but for the rule I'm fine with it. I'm totally fine with it being to the second for the rule. But like in a meeting, I'm not gonna dock somebody until it hits the 01. That's when I'm like, now you're late. I'll give you the 59 seconds to run in the door.
But you're giving it to them because they were late.
No, not late. In my mind, I don't consider them late. No, if I get to choose,
then why do you consider me 10 minutes late if I'm at 8? It's 7:10.
You're twisting this into a
no,
math equation.
No, I'm asking that question.
Because that is the easier way to do it, and I don't nitpick every second in an argument just to sound right like you're doing right now.
This is about someone being 12 seconds late.
Well, we're talking about different things now. I'm no longer talking about that.
Okay.
I'm talking about if I were to consider somebody late and you're just trying to make me sound wrong I get to decide when somebody's late.
I was
scenario.
Just trying to ask a question.
Okay.
Either way.
You just keep digging. I'm done with it.
All right.
Either way,
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
I don't understand how anybody would have sympathy for him
No one did.
I don't know how
who liked the second half of the statement of the PGA's allowing dudes to play in FPO, yeah, then it made them just like the whole tweet.
But like, how can you even get mad enough to tweet about that whenever you're literally just like you showed up late?
Well, what I thought
you knew what time because he shot 20 over par.
Yeah, but you knew what time you were supposed to show up.
Yes.
I don't think he would have tweeted it if he hadn't. Funny, because it was after his round, right?
I don't know when he tweeted this. He tweeted 3:47 p.m.
So it
had to be at least during his round.
I think if he came off the course and it had somehow scraped together a decent round, he probably wouldn't have said it.
The thing is, just he was just comparing apples to oranges. Like, he just threw in from left field. It was just, I pulled up my phone and I was like, that is the most out of the blue tweet.
Well, it's a little weird that he decided to, like, he stepped away from the hot take thing and then came in and just, like, he basically took a blender to the pot and
stirred
it up.
A take.
No, it was just like, he just threw it out there.
Well, it was an opinion.
Natalie Ryan responded with, immediately after the most serious threat our sport has ever seen, Austin Hanum decided to use the exact language that led to the threat being made in the first place, calling trans women anything other than women, just as he did today, invites people to take matters into their own hands and call in farther threats of violence or worse. PDGA, if you're serious about everyone's safety, then this needs to end now. That was Natalie Ryan's response. I think she posted that on, it looks like Facebook. I got the screenshot from Reddit, but looks like it was on Facebook. But that was to start Champions Cups. You were just like, we're in for quite a weekend here.
It's crazy.
When that's how Champions Cup started.
It was quite a start.
Top 10, do we even want to try to tackle this right now?
Gosh, man, hour and 12 minutes in. I feel like if we try to tackle it based off of this event that is so like different, we're going to have a brain aneurysm.
So we want to wait till after DDO next weekend.
We might have to.
And combine DDO and Champions Cup into one update.
We might have to.
I'm okay with that. This event is an outlier.
It hurts my brain. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's going to be so many things. There's going to be so many people that like we would probably overrate that are going to just.
Well, because like,
it's going to be
President
different.
Just won a major.
Right.
How do you not put him in the top 10? Let's give him a week, see what he does at DDO.
Yeah. Our top 10 is whatever we want it to be.
Well, yeah, it's just a gut check.
Gut check?
Like, if someone wins a major, though, and we update it right now, you can't not put them in the top 10.
It's just really funny. Like,
we're going to let the list sit and see what happens at DDO.
Yeah, we got
to
let them marinate.
And then combine
the
data into one update.
Mm-hmm. We got to marinate. Basically, anytime.
Well, no, there's a good way to do it because DDO is the anti-Champions Cup.
True.
So it's a good tell of like how disc golfers actually
Let's take a bigger look at the scene. We don't want to get too dialed in, man. Get out of the microscope. Look at it from
if you look
on a skyscraper. Look at the scene.
If you were to take a microscope to this wood grain,
right,
that would look completely different.
Like, dang, that's not real wood.
It would look completely different than like from the viewers at home. You probably just broke their hearts telling them. It wasn't
real
wood.
You guys know that our table is a circle now? Did anybody know?
No one commented.
Guys, our table is a circle.
They can tell, right, Con?
I mean, it's
they
a circle.
Can see this.
They don't know it's a circle. They only that it's a
it could
at
be
least
semi-circle.
A semicircle.
Yeah,
it's actually it's like a Pac-Man. There's a missing.
It's just
piece
the foundation logo with a. It's a Pac-Man with a fang.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's like $1 million underneath the table.
Yep. Time guys, for the style select.
Really quick tag in here at the end. I just came back from the beach, which meant that I do what all of us do when we're at the beach, and that's just play catch for a long time on the beach.
What was your go-to catch disc?
It was the glitch. Glitch.
Oh, it's so much fun.
So it's just like, I feel like once a year, I have to get in this state of mind where I'm like, if I only played with a glitch, I'd be awesome at disc golf. So I just let you know that I'm back in that state.
Do you want to do like the Sonic bet, but with glitches?
I'm ready to get hurt again.
Oh. Wait, but last time we only did it because you were like really confident.
No,
you'd beat Hunter.
I'm not confident that I would beat anyone with a glitch, but I am good at throwing a glitch.
Who do you think you could beat? Call someone out
call
that works
out.
Here.
Just call somebody. I bet you could call me out, and I wouldn't even be offended.
I could
I'm
beat
awful
this
at throwing
person
a glitch.
Peaks you shorts with a glitch.
I bet you could beat me.
I do think I could beat Trevor just because I am better at throwing a glitch than Trevor.
Absolutely.
All right, what do you want to put on the launch?
Absolutely.
Last time I put a 5-hour Minecraft stream. He ran 5 miles. That was on the line.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do another bet?
So aggressive.
I don't. Well, I would do something different than.
No, that was just. That was the last bet. Was I had to play Minecraft for 5 hours if I lost.
No,
you had to run 5 miles if you lost.
Let's figure it out.
Does it have to be that aggressive?
No. Y'all are. This
we'll
is a new.
It out.
This
do we
is
have to figure out right now?
If you have an idea,
it's more fun.
Okay. I don't have an idea.
You have an idea?
Okay. Peaks you shorts glitch only. If I win, I'm trying to think of like what you would actually be willing to do though as well. Okay, if I win.
Well, you just throw out, if you lose, what are you willing to do? That's how it started, and then he matched. That's how we got to the five-mile thing.
If I lose, I would be willing to... If I do another live stream, man, I'm dead. Oh, man. But I don't really know any other punishments that get me anywhere around here. You know, that's what people keep coming back for. Maybe I would do the count the whole, all the discs in the warehouse thing.
Okay.
Okay, I'll put... Well, what if we just...
You both put that on the line?
Yeah,
we loser has to count all the discs in the warehouse? All right.
Gosh, dude.
That's how these videos are made right there. That's beautiful. Can't wait. I'll film
it. That's going to suck, bro.
Why'd y'all put that on the line?
I don't know.
All right, Style Select, what's in the back?
I got it. Are those called the love discs? What are they called?
The Jester discs.
The Jester disc, love.
Was that one of them?
Oh, that's in here. Okay.
That's it. That's what's in there.
Dude, that is actually a dirty guess because Silas is a dirty dog and he might pick. What's one of the other ones? The Dreamcatcher? Is that one of them?
Yeah, I think so.
Was it a Dreamcatcher? I'm going to take the Jester disc Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher?
That might not even be a real one. But
I'm going with the Glitch. A lot of talk about the Glitch.
Oh, dude, okay, you're feeling it.
If it's a Jester disc and it's the third mold that we didn't pick, I'd freak out.
My hand's on it.
Oh,
that was a Supra.
He likes toying with us.
Man.
That's the thing is, he's like a serial killer in the way where they always they get too cocky after they keep winning, and they get a little too cocky and they slip up. And what he's doing now,
they start going to the
us.
Funerals. Yeah.
he's playing with us right now. The Supra.
Right now, Silas is attending our funeral. Yeah.
How much thought do you think Silas actually puts into it?
I think he puts thought into it.
Do you think he walks out?
I think I see the little smirk on his face after he gets it. We don't get it.
I feel like his best bet would just be to walk out there and just grab a disc.
That would be his best bet,
but
that's not what he's
doing. Yeah, that's not what he's doing.
Because like eventually you can figure Silas out.
I don't think he puts a lot of time into it, but I think there's like a... I think he gets more.
It was actually a first run.
He gets more gratification out of it if he picks one that's right
true.
In our wheelhouse and we miss it. He's like,
"Oh, true.
It was right beneath your nose the whole time."
That
he loves
true.
That. That's Silas
he does love that.
He
stuff.
Loves it.
There you go. Another week, no winners. I mean, when we get the first winner, it's just going to be
it's
chaos.
Gonna be toxic.
Do we keep playing after
yeah,
we get
yeah,
a winner?
Yeah, you okay. keep playing because then the person who's got it gets to be like, oh, you ever won this before? Oh, did you ever win this
oh,
before?
Oh, you never won a Silas
You Lux? Never won?
And then two people get to do that to the third person.
Yeah. And
in
when,
12
yeah.
years.
You never know.
You never know. We could have a hot streak.
No way. The odds are so, so slim of ever getting it at all. But it will happen because... Like, as much as Silas's range is unlimited, I don't think he's doing it random at this point. So I do think there is a time where we'll get it.
Well, like the Supra, I said something about in the meeting this morning.
Yeah. Oh, we gotta plant it in his conscience.
We bait him?
Let's plant it in his conscience.
Yeah.
We just start
Next
putting the disc
him.
In front of him. Like, we say it offhand. Just say it. There's a poster.
Well, okay, but who
now
do we
on
guess?
Sale. Huh?
Who do we let guess?
All of us.
We all guess it.
We all go
at
in.
At the same time, we Dude. Count down. We count down 3, 2, 1.
All right.
We're going to see if we can.
We'll have a meeting off camera.
It's like when we planted the song. Who did we plant that in? Did we plant it in Connor's head? I think you and I planted it in Connor's head.
What are you talking about?
Did we? I remember, but why do I feel like it got planted to me?
Oh, maybe Connor. Did
I think y'all planted a song in my head.
Either I planted a song in somebody's head where we started to try to get them to start humming it, and it worked. And I can't remember if we did it to... Connor, if we did it to you, but
it was Connor.
Yeah,
we just started. We played it when I got in the car. I would play it when we put it on like playlists.
We were like trying not to laugh, and then he got home and he was like, or he got to back to work and was like going to the bathroom. He started whistling it.
Yeah, because Trevor and I looked at him and went,
"We did it."
I don't know if we ever told you.
What?
Yeah, you never told me about that.
It was just one of those things that like...
You didn't have to work that hard. You probably could just sing it, and I would sing it as well.
That's basically what happened.
Yeah.
I think it was the same day.
It was very quick.
Yeah,
very quick.
I mean, if the last song that's played, I'm going to hum it the rest of the day.
Fair. All right. We know what to do. We'll see you next week.